We're having a special class on relationships on the Jewish home. And our class is about life the day after you get married. Don't try to take what we study here and apply it to dating or building a relationship pre-marriage. This won't work. It's a different world. What we're discussing here is how to build a relationship post-marriage. If you guys want, now that you're half the class, we can take some time tonight and also discuss pre-marriage dating, if you want. But our class in general focuses on post-marriage. You walked out of the chuppah, you're married, now what? How do we make it work? So, throughout life, we build relationships. We build relationships and walk away from relationships. If you think back over the course of your life, you'll notice that there were people who had a lot of meaning in your life. It could be your kindergarten teacher. It could be your first grade teacher. It could be your best friend in second grade. There are stages in life when different people have a lot of meaning to us. It could be that in seventh grade you had a history teacher who you thought was God. And it could be that in high school there was someone who you thought was a genius and brilliant and you looked up to them. And it could be that just 2 years ago you really had a very good friend. And it could be you had a business partner. It could be someone you admired, you liked their classes. But throughout all of our life, we keep creating relationships and walking away from them and they die. We create new relationships and we forget about old ones. And then we move on and we're okay with that.
But it's the nature.
It's the nature of life. Right. Except for family. Okay? People are not supposed to walk away from their kids. People are not supposed to walk away from their parents. And where people discover a very big hardship is that they're not supposed to walk away from their spouse. Because the spouse is the one relationship which is exactly in the middle. You want your spouse to be your best friend, and yet you want your spouse to be family. You know that you're not supposed to abandon your kids or your parents. We don't know, deeply enough, we don't know that we're not supposed to abandon our spouse. The first challenge that we have in marriage is recognizing that this is for keeps. We're building something, and sometimes it's going to be more fun, and sometimes it's going to be even more fun. Sometimes maybe not. But this is forever, and I'm not going to walk away from it. And that, in our generation, is harder than it ever was before, because we're drinking from a cup right now. And no one thinks they're going to hold on to this cup beyond the next hour. And an hour you dispose. We live in a disposable world. Even cars are becoming disposable. You buy a cell phone and you're very excited about it. And you hope that in 4 years this will be obsolete, right? You hope technology will advance to the point where you won't even save it, right? You really hope that in 4 years it will be much quicker, much better. Everything we have, even the things that we think are great, we've developed an approach where we don't expect to get too attached to them, right? Like a friend of mine, his cell phone broke. I asked him, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to get a better one. What do you mean? It's an opportunity. I'm upgrading. Okay, so in marriage, it doesn't work that way. There is no upgrade. Okay, let's reformat. Can we start that again? No, we're building something long term. And that's the strength of marriage. That's also the hardship of marriage. Because when you have a friend and he starts getting on your nerves, so you spend a little less time with them. And then you decide, are they still getting on my nerves? Do I want to spend more time with them? You can play with it. You have a wife and she's getting on your nerves, you're not going to stay at work. I mean, you might, but that's not the life you want. You want to be coming home and building. And so one of the tools we try to gain in this class, I should say two of the tools. The first is to recognize that it's normal in marriage to have hardships. And it's normal to have periods where it's not so much fun to be together. Marriages go through ups and downs. The second tool we try to gain is to have more ups and less downs, right? To know to avoid the pitfalls and how to build up a good relationship. And it's not so obvious. Fact of the matter is, most people end up getting divorced today, right? I think that's a statistic. Most people don't last in marriage, and there are many reasons for that. But that we'll explore as we go through the year. So point number one, it's normal that it's hard. And the first thing that a person, the first bridge that a person has to cross is to make a decision, I'm in. And one of the greatest gifts we give one another in marriage is the knowledge that our partner is in. If you came home and found that your wife switched the locks on you, you should be upset. There's a big problem now. If your wife picked up the phone and discovered that you canceled that line and you didn't give her your new cell phone, there's a big problem right now. Why? Because certain things have to be givens. There's a given that we live under the same roof. We come back to the same house. There's a given that we communicate. And those are the basis. There's also a given that you're a part of my life, I'm a part of your life. That has to be a given. And the truth is that in our generation, that is probably the hardest step of marriage that everyone goes through. Because I'll quote you a conversation that takes place very frequently. A guy shows up a few weeks after he gets married, and he looks like he's seen a ghost. And I say, wait, I'll tell you. And he goes, what do you mean you'll tell me? I say, you don't talk, I'll talk now, okay? And the guy says, okay, Rabbi, but what are you going to say? I'm going to tell you what you're about to say. Okay. So I tell the guy, she's a witch. She's worse than a witch. She is cruel and unkind and unfair, and I deeply regret marrying her. So the guy looks at me and says, if you knew, then why didn't you tell me beforehand? Right? And the answer is, everyone goes through this in marriage. You reach a point after marriage where you suddenly start discovering who you married, and at that point you say, wait a second, I'm with this person for life? Excuse me, she's got some real problems. Guess what? So do I. But we sort of ignore them. Every person has some real issues. We all do. Some of them we should work on so that we come into marriage and it's more pleasant to live with us. And others we're going to spend their whole lives working on. And we need a spouse who wants to connect with us, even though we're that type of person. And we're all that type of person, right? We all have our weakness. One person's weakness is they're always late. Another guy is always filthy. Another guy can never keep his mouth shut. Every person has their weakness, you know? We all have, and it's not usually there's one big one and another few little ones, and that's weaknesses we pay the price for throughout our life, and then our spouse has to pay the price with us. But you know what? That's what marriage is. We're getting together, and we want someone. The greatest gift we can give someone is the feeling that we're accepting them with their foibles, with their weaknesses. And that's the greatest gift we all want. What do people want in marriage? You want acceptance. You want someone to say, I love you the way you are. I don't think you're perfect, but I'm happy with you the way you are. And that's maybe the biggest challenge we all have. Can we be so loving? Can I be that type of husband that when my wife forgets her credit card on the counter and we just lost all my month's salary, I'm going to say, that's okay. Can I be that wife? True story, a couple got married, and the husband tells his wife, I can't trust you with the marriage money, you're a woman, boy. So he says to her, I'll take it. And then he goes, and he takes a taxi somewhere, and he forgets the envelope with all their money, all the wedding gifts, everything in the taxi. And then he walks into the house, and then his wife says, where's the envelope? And he goes, oh, and he runs out, and the taxi's gone, never to be heard from again. All the savings they thought they'd buy a new house with, gone. How do you live with someone after that? Especially because he told her, I can't trust you with it, right? Okay, we make mistakes. Can we be accepting people, even though the other party made mistakes? So that's probably the great challenge of building a relationship. If we were to summarize what do we want to accomplish in the long run and what's the great challenge, we want to accomplish real connection. Real connection means I'm going to accept the other person even though I realize they're not perfect. I'm willing to accept I want to connect, and I'm not going to keep pointing out their imperfections. And that's the great challenge. So now that we have the long-term goal, now let's begin with practical from the beginning. Okay, Mazal Tov, you got married. You know what's the first thing that happens after you get married? Quick story. What? Right. How'd you know? You see your friends. So, one of the rabbis I learned by told me the following story about himself. He was learning by Rav Moshe Feinstein. So he walks in one morning and he says to Rav Moshe Feinstein, he says, Rebbe, I got engaged last night. So Rav Feinstein says to him, Mazel Tov. So he goes, wait, I'm still going to get out of it. So, why? As Rebbe asked him, why? Is there anything wrong? He says, I'm not sure. There's this natural tendency to have buyer's remorse. We all have it. We have it on many fronts, and it's natural to have it after you get engaged. When I used to learn with Chatanim in Merkaz Arav, whenever a Chatan would come in and say, I engaged, I'd like to get married, do you mind going over the halachas with me? I'd sit down and talk to them, and after about 2-3 minutes, I'd say, I won't tell anyone, but do you regret it yet? And the guy looks at me in shock, and of course not. And I say, okay, in a week or two, you'll feel like you can confide in me, then we'll be able to talk about it. But when you get that feeling, I just want you to know it's normal. Everyone else gets it. It's normal. Don't think you're crazy, because after you got engaged, you suddenly look back and say, oh no, what did I do? That was a mistake. It's normal. But you know what? It's normal not only after you get engaged. We just haven't spoken in a while. Very good friend who emigrated to Israel, and he told me the following story. He was married about 4 or 5 years, and he went to his rabbi in a different country. And he says to the rabbi, you know, I'm married 4 or 5 years. I think I made a mistake. I keep thinking it over, and I'm really not convinced I married the right woman. So the rabbi looks at him and he says to him, you know, I'm married 35 years and I'm still not convinced I married the right woman. In other words, if you're going to keep asking that question, you could stay with that question your whole life. Meaning, after you get married...
You see a lot of people ask that question. You see people that they're not, they know that their wife has faults and she's not perfect and I'm not perfect, but they still know that they're shidduch. And there's people that they're not. I see it. I see other people too that their whole life they weren't meant to be. That's the truth. So what if they're together 50 years? It doesn't mean anything. It's 50 years of a disaster. Yes, that's the truth.
Okay, so let's deal with that. In 1 minute, I just want to close the point we're discussing, and then we'll get to that. The first challenge that every couple faces is whether they'll keep asking themselves that question. Did I make a mistake? That's the first challenge every couple faces. Some people keep reliving that challenge their whole life. Now, I want to give you a very bad example, okay? But it's an example nonetheless. You came to this class and you know it's great. You're sitting here thinking every second, this class is amazing, I'm so happy I came. But imagine if it weren't that way. Imagine if you sat here and every second you were asking yourself, was it worth it or wasn't it worth it? So then every time I hit a topic that's not exactly exciting, it's like, oh shucks, I know I shouldn't have come out here. Now that's what happens in a more major scale in marriage. If we go through marriage and we're not willing to make that step, this is right. It's not a question of will this work, it's a question of how will it work. Then every little thing that happens, it's like, I knew it, and suddenly the tally becomes so big, every day you end up saying, I don't know what I got myself into, why do I have to put up with this? I knew a couple that were married for over 20 years, and then they separated. They already had married off children, they already had grandchildren, then they separated. And someone convinced them that they can make work, they should get back together again. So they came to a very big rabbi and they said, Rabbi, we want your counsel, we want to experiment and get back together again. So the rabbi said, don't, it won't work. Rabbi, we thought you would tell us we should. He says, of course you should. we don't understand. But I said, no, you should get back together again to get back together again. But if you get back together again as an experiment in marriage never works. So long as you're in marriage and asking yourself, is this working? The answer is always it's not. Because on any given day within a marriage, within the most beautiful marriage, there are tens of things that we do that annoys the other person. So if I'm constantly asking myself, did I make the right choice? The answer will always be no. If marriage is an experiment, then I'm always going to come up with the answer, this was a mistake. Because on any given day, marriage is going to be very annoying. And even on the day you're celebrating your anniversary, and even on the day that you think it's perfect, we're having a date and everything's great, right? You're still going to annoy your spouse. You're going to do a few things that really tick them off, and they're going to do a few things that really tick you off. And even on the good days, and on the average days, if you're only together, there are going to be a lot of things that annoy. And that's a normal marriage. So that's why the rabbi said to them, you can't experiment. Another mashal, okay? What's this similar to? I don't know if you experienced this. In my youth, I used to go swimming. Once upon a time, I was once young. You're supposed to say you still are, rabbi. Okay, I'm joking. So once upon a time, I used to go swimming. And when they used to have diving boards, you know, one that you had to go up 3 steps, one that you had to go up 10 steps, and then one that you had to go up like 30 steps, like really high, right? And that, there was a line to each diving board. You ever see these pools with these? So did you ever go online and see those people that go up the steps slowly? And the whole line is waiting behind them. And then they stand on the top diving board and they're hesitating and they take a deep breath and they look down, they look up, and everyone's waiting behind them trying to be polite. And then they walk to the edge of the diving board and then they say, no, let me try again, and they walk back. You know what I'm talking about? You know what's most dangerous for these people? These people are going to be perfectly all right if they walk back down and get off the diving board, they're going to be okay. If they jump and go in, they're going to be okay. When does it become real dangerous? When they start jumping, and then they're about to jump off, and they decide they want to put one leg back on the diving board, then they get really hurt. They could really hit the leg on the diving board, flip over, tear ligaments. That's when they can get hurt, right? Marriage is the same thing. When people are ready to get married, they got to jump off. There's only one way. Those people who say, let me leave a Swiss bank account, let me leave some of my jewelry by my parents, they're not jumping into marriage. Well, it's not going to work that way. There's no way it can work. Now, I want to address what you brought up. There are diseases in this world. There are simple diseases, there are complex diseases, and then there are lethal diseases. There are all kinds of diseases, right? And people make this mistake. I spoke to an expert, the top specialist in Jerusalem on AIDS, HIV, AIDS. And he told me, people think you can't catch AIDS from someone coughing next to you. It's not true. It depends on what stage the virus is at. But if a person is not taking medication and they're at a certain stage of the virus, then people can contract it from a cough. That was mind-boggling to me. Like, that's not a well-known fact, right? I didn't know that till I spoke to him. So I'm going to tell you something very shocking, but it's true. There's this misconception about love. People think that love is like a disease. You either catch it or you don't. If you catch it, so not, life is beautiful. And if you don't, no, you're going to have to live with a loveless marriage. And it doesn't work that way. There's no such thing as a marriage that's good off the bat. There's no such thing as marriage that's fun and great and it just works and these two are meant to be together. If you ever saw a couple that are at peace and harmony and they're good with one another, it's because they've invested a lot of work. No one has it that they walked into marriage, now it's fun, it's great to be with the other party. No one. It doesn't exist. You can have people who lead parallel lives. They share a roof and they have nothing to do with one another and they're at peace with one another. You have your room, I have my room, we meet together when it works for both of us. They lead parallel lives, they're not really together. But once people are together and they try to get together, then the natural thing that happens when a man and woman tries together is H. There's fire. There's gotta be fire. Now the question is, can there be Shechina Beinayim? We know Ish and Isha are both Ish, and they both have two letters of Hashem's name, the Yud and the He, right? Ish, Aleph Yud Shin, Isha, Aleph Shin He. And the only way that it won't be Ish is if there's Yud K, if there's godliness between them. What's godliness? So let's look, there's a couple, and let's call them Freddie and Marina. So Freddie sees Marina, and he's not so comfortable because she went into the realtor's office, and she went into the back room with the real estate agent, and she came back after 10 minutes, and he's like, what were you doing in the back room? And she goes, he was showing me pictures of the houses. And he goes, well, why were you alone in the back room with him? And she goes, well, I didn't know it bothered you. And he goes, do me a favor. He seems like a slime ball to me. I don't want you to be alone with him anymore. Ta-ta-ta-ta-tam, says the Torah, there's a mitzvah called sota. When a husband tells his wife, I don't want you to be alone with that guy, so then a certain halachic process starts kicking into effect. He told her, I don't want you to be alone. She can't be alone. She can't be alone. That means that, let's say, she's in the makolet. Little makolet, little yeshuv. She's in the makolet in the back room looking through the eggs to see which layer of eggs is not doesn't have a broken egg in it, right? She looks up and she sees what we call him. We didn't say what was the realtor's name. She sees Mr. Realtor standing next to her picking up some milk. She looks around the makolet. There's no one there. She runs out. She's not going to be alone with him in that makolet lest her husband see and come back. Now her husband walks by, and before she runs out, he looks into the makolet, and he sees, huh, they're alone again. Was he looking after her? Is she looking after him? What's going on here? So he calls her, and he says, I asked you not to be alone with him, and now I see you were alone with him. So the Torah, so she says, what are you talking about? I was in a makolet. He says, no, there was no one else there. It was only you and him. And she goes, yeah, but nothing happened. He goes, how do I know? Did you guys make up to show up exactly at that hour? No one would be there. So now there are fights going on in the house. Says the Torah, go to the Beit HaMikdash. They come to the Beit HaMikdash. So the husband says, I told her not to be alone. I asked her not to be alone with him. How come she was alone with him? She goes, I didn't pay attention. I saw him walk in. I thought there were other people there. Then after 10 minutes, I noticed we were alone in the makolet. I forgot the makolet owner told me he was leaving for 10 minutes. I didn't notice no one was coming. The husband goes, well, why was the makolet open at 10:30 at night anyways? Why? How come you both made it at that time? But nothing happened. I don't know if nothing happened. Says the Torah, they go up to the Kohen. They come to the Beit HaMikdash. The Kohen asks the woman, you know, did something inappropriate happen between you and the guy? And she goes, no. If she's adamant that nothing happened. So she's upset her husband. He's upset at her. Says the Torah, we write out the Parsha of Sota. After we write out the Parsha of Sota, we keep asking her, are you sure you're innocent? She says, yeah, 100%. What do? We erase it into a cup of water and we give it to her to drink. And we know the rest of the story, right? If she was clean, so then she gets blessed. She has children more easily, more beautiful children, everything goes well. And if she was not faithful to her husband, she has an unnatural death. Okay, wait a second. What's the message in this whole story? So I thought that the message in the whole story is Hashem's telling us, how do you make peace? Hashem says, you husband, you're so tough with your wife. You wife, you saw he was sensitive to it. You couldn't take his feelings into account. Both of you are standing your ground. I'm fair. I'm being right. I'm not giving in. Okay, that's why you're up a creek. If you're going, marriage is not about fair and right. You cannot build a relationship with who's in the right. We always think that if I'm right, then why are you upset at me? I'm right. Marriage doesn't work that way. Relationships aren't about right and wrong. Relationships are about forgiveness. Relationships are about connection. Connection means, even though you're not right, I'm gonna do this for you. I'm gonna give in. And Hashem teaches us that. Hashem could have said, leave me alone, you guys are nutcases. You're driving her crazy, she's driving him crazy. Make it work. What does Hashem say? Erase my name. Erase my name into the waters. What's Hashem telling us? I think the message is, you want to make peace? Be willing to erase some of that ego. Am I willing to erase myself? But I think I'm right. Okay, so you're right. Now this goes very far. The greater you are, the further it goes. And I again, no one can make marriage work unless they're willing to work at it. There's no other way.
What happens in case one partner wants to work on the marriage and the other one is too stale? You're like this and you're like that, and you're being too sensitive and you're being too rude. I just want to work. Let's make this better. But, you know, she's not
responsive.
Not responsive. Or she just doesn't think it's nothing to work out. You know, with
that.
Nothing to work out. What's when there's one person who wants to work and one person who doesn't want to work? Doesn't feel it.
That's a long answer. That takes a series. You know, you guys are trying to cover the whole series in one night.
In our generation, it happens a lot that someone who comes, sit here, study with you, say yes. Holy shtadil, right?
Goes home, there's no one to work with. There's no one to try to make something better. There's no one to talk to.
Rule number one, there's never anyone to work with. Rule number two, takes one to tangle. Want to make marriage work? You can make marriage work. See, no. It's...
My friend just got married 2 months ago. He talked to me a few days ago. He said he's not getting a divorce.
Good, I told you. Everyone does.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something. I didn't say anything, but at the same time, what I see inside, it doesn't look like she's going to... Me specifically, I doubted it since the first time I saw her. No, seriously, because she doesn't look like a person that understands or that tries to work hard or anything like that. So what is it? If you get a divorce, are you going to tell him no, keep working, and he understands the rhyme? At the same time, if you get a divorce, well, then when he has kids, it's much worse.
Again, every marriage, if it takes its natural course, will be miserable. Okay? There's no such thing as a marriage that's going to be fun unless you work at it. In the movies, they lived happily ever after. In reality, when you get married, it might be during Sheva Brachos, it might be a week later. Some people can hold out a year or two being nice to one another. At some point, you suddenly realize, I'm going to be miserable with this person. And there's no other way. Because the relationships we have until we get married are easy. You can walk away, you can lower the flame, you can walk into your room, you're separate. Marriage is suddenly the fusion of two people. Excuse me, I like my remote control here. And when I finish eating the apple, I want to put it down here. And when I go to bed, I want to leave my floss next to the bed. And when I take off my socks, I'm going to put them next to the bed. And if you don't like it, so what? Excuse me, you can't build a relationship that way.
I believe in
that. Oh, but it suddenly affects every level of your being, including the things you believe in.
I believe in hard work. That's the first thing. I believe in hard work. I believe in hard work. But at the same time, if you have, just like you said, if you have one side of the losing hard work, the other side of the...
Let me tell you a story.
Most of the generation, round is like that. That's why I'm not even thinking about getting married. Honestly. Because that's what I say outside. No one's out there for fun. Everyone's for fun. And they're right. According to them, they're right. Because if everything starts from me and what I enjoy and what's fun for me, then why not? It's just like I get a new iPhone or a new car, so why shouldn't I get a younger woman, right? If it starts from you. If everything's meaning. If you come up with something bigger, it doesn't start from you. There's something much bigger than they understand. Most of the generation, it's not hard work. It's... want it now, I want it happen.
You're talking
that's
about pre-marriage, that's next week.
No, that's how it is. So if you ask, you know, no, I'm not going to get married. No, not at all. That's what I see out there. I don't see people that want work. That's how most of the generation. That's why my friends I see after a few months get a divorce. Tachlis.
He's right that this is pre-marriage.
This is first you have to find someone that you think you can work with, and then you make the mistake in marriage. Then you have to work. That's what he's talking about. First of all, you have to find someone who you think you could work with, and then you can.
How old are you two?
26. 27, I'm 24.
They grew up together.
That's a good question.
What I see.
I don't see how I can answer you in one class. See, it's not, I'm saying whatever I'm going to answer, you're going to ask two more questions, which are good questions. You're asking good questions. I'm not, let's recap what we discussed so far, and then I have to see if we can, if we can tackle that on a certain level. So far we discussed that marriage is not a disease, love is not a disease, it's not, there are those that are bitten and those that are not, those that contract it and those that do not, but rather it involves a lot of work. And anytime you see a good marriage and a marriage you think, wow, I want my marriage to look like that, first of all, you have no idea what's going on behind closed doors, and secondly, even if it's as good as you think it is, which it probably isn't, probably has a lot of hardships you're unaware of, it only became good after a lot of work. No one got there without a lot of work. Marriage is probably the most worthwhile investment you can make in your life, but it requires the hardest investment. And we discussed the idea that marriage is a long-term relationship. It's natural that a person will feel like this was a major mistake in their life, and a person has to be willing to say, I'm going to make this work. That's when they can start. If a person is constantly questioning whether they made the right decision, they will always come up thinking this was wrong. They might have moments where they'll think it was right, but the majority of the time they're going to come up saying, oh boy, this is way too tough, this isn't fair, I don't have to put up with this. Whatever the this is. Okay, I can't address every aspect of your question, but I want to address some aspects. Okay? True story. Couple was married for many years, and they had raised many children together, and they had tremendous success in their marriage and in their chinuch, and things were going very well. And then one day, someone was able to convince the wife that the husband was way too strict with the kids. So they had a neighbor who had decided that she didn't like the way the husband was with the kids. He was too tough. And she kept hammering it into the wife. You know, your husband is way too tough with kids. You know, this is the 20th century, 21st century. He is way too tough with those kids. You know, this isn't Europe. This isn't fair. Da-da-da-da-da. Over and over and over again. After a few years, she penetrated. And one day, the husband comes home, and one of the kids misbehaves, and he reacts. And the wife goes, why are you reacting like that? And he's thinking, I didn't do anything different than I've been doing in the last 15, 20 years we've been married. But he sees her getting all riled up, and she goes into the room all shaken up. He has such a violent husband, she's married, and he doesn't know what she wants from his life, and he doesn't realize the background why this is happening. And so it progresses. And day after day, week after week, she starts seeing, my neighbor's right. He is so violent with the kids. He is so tough with the kids. He realizes, okay, something changed. This isn't the marriage I had until today. We need to work this out. And he tries talking to her, and he sees he's not getting anywhere. So what does he do? He says, let's go to therapy. Look, you're so upset with me. You're so you're saying everything I'm doing is wrong. They go to therapy. They come to the therapist. They sit down. The therapist hears them both out. The therapist comes to the husband and says, buddy, your wife feels this is wrong. In order for this marriage to work, you're going to have to compromise. And the husband says, fine, if that's what it'll take to work. I don't agree with her. I don't think we should change the way we've been bringing up our kids. But if that's what it's going to take to make it work, I'm willing to do it. They draw up a contract. They draw up an agreement. He's not going to do A, B, C, and D. He will give in on X, Y, and Z. Everything's organized. 3 weeks later, he's living up to his end of the deal. But what does she see? You're so tough. You're so tough. It's not fair. You're so tough. So he says, what's so tough? So she comes with a whole new list of things. So he says, wait, we went to a therapist. We came to an agreement. She goes, oh, so the therapist covers everything? You can't be so tough with the kids. You can't keep doing this. This isn't right. He tries talking to her. He sees he's going nowhere. Back to the therapist. Another few sessions, new agreement. And this happened again and again until it reached the point where 2 o'clock in the morning, he's trying to go to sleep. The kids are drilling and hammering, and there's a neighbor downstairs trying to go to sleep, and he can't say anything because whatever he tries to say, any type of discipline, anytime he's going to say no, then he's too tough. And it reached a point where the kids were literally at 2 o'clock in the morning drilling and hammering and doing every crazy thing you can imagine, but he couldn't say a word because whatever he said, she perceived as, you're too tough. And it reached a point, he couldn't sleep at home. He went out, he left the house. He left, and ultimately, he couldn't mend his marriage. Okay. How did it all start? Because of the perception that she had of her husband. One of the most dangerous and most powerful things we have is called framing. If I were to tell you, you know, tonight, I just want you to know, you're gonna have class sitting next to the world's super genius. He is a major chemist, and he has just developed things. He's a multi-millionaire. He flew in with a jet, and he's here. He's gonna sit next to you, and in 2-3 hours, he's gonna fly back out to England. He just came to visit class. You would look at him like, wow. You would be in sheer amazement of who you're sitting next to. Right? I frame them. If I tell you all kinds of amazing things about him, true or not, in your perception you see him that way, that's it. He's an amazing person. Now, it could be he didn't do anything. It could be it's true, it's not true. Your perception defines it. This is very, very, very powerful. This is where parents can make or destroy a marriage. When a parent calls and says, did Shmerel get a job yet? They're giving you the feeling Shmerel is a loser. But I didn't say he was a loser. I was just inquiring. I just want to know if he got a job. And did what's her name finally get a job? Right? Did what's her name, if they talk about your wife that way? They're slowly building a certain perception. And they call at 10 in the morning. Did what's her name get up yet? They're trying, slowly, they're getting you to feel your wife is lazy. So we can frame someone. We can give a perception that someone is a certain way. And once we do that, then things become very dangerous. We have a child that's a major klutz. Okay, when I say major klutz, it's like when I pour this child a drink, I give it to their hands. And I stay away because I know chances are they're going to spill. So once the child asked for a drink, I poured the drink. I took the bottle and I put it on the other side of the table. And then she wanted something there. Next thing I know, boom, it's flying in my face. She couldn't get that thing without knocking over. Everything is... What's the most dangerous thing that can happen? If I decide this child is a klutz, then I have a real problem. Because then everything I do with this child will be, I will perceive it that way. We had a kid years ago that we would walk in the street, and this child would walk straight into a pole. They didn't notice there was a pole there. I'd be walking, and suddenly the kid would be crying miserably because they just walked into a pole. And my wife and I asked, we looked at one another and we said, is this normal? Shouldn't a kid realize they're going to walk into a pole? The kid's mind was all over the place. And it became that we'd walk in the street and look for poles because we'd have to yank him away from walking into the poles. So one day, I'm walking. We're not in a strange place. We're literally a minute away from home. And the kid grabs me and goes, Abba, Abba. And he's all excited. What happened? And he goes, there's a pole right there, and I walked around it. And I came home and I said to my wife, the Ribbono Shel Olam blessed us with kids. Some are more talented and some are less talented. We're just going to have to live with this kid that is very proud of themselves when they don't walk straight into a pole. And we both sat down to comfort ourselves that is a good kid, and say there, that's, you know, you don't get to choose the brains and talents of your kids. You live with them. And then this little kid, a half a year later, and he must have been like 4.5, 5.5, is sitting in the room, and we're discussing something about time, and he calculates the time that's left, and he says, that's going to be in 2.5 hours. And we look at him and say, what? So the kid, yeah, and he explains to us how he did the math. So my wife and I looked at one another like, he has a brain after all. This kid, when he was like 5, 5.5, could suddenly do math that his 9 and 10 year old siblings couldn't do. Like, in certain areas, he's talented. In other areas, like not walking into a pole, that's not his strong point, okay? But you suddenly realize, I can't look at him as a dunce. He's not a dunce. But the worst thing to him is if I'm gonna look at him as a dunce. And we walked around for a good year, year and a half, my wife and I both thinking, how can we help him? How can we enrich him? You know, if walking into a pole is hard for him, how do you enrich a child? And Baruch Hashem, he showed us he's not a dunce. He has his strengths, he has his weaknesses. Walking into poles wasn't his strength at that age, and other things were okay. If a person decides my spouse is selfish, and that's a very easy decision to make. We're all selfish. But when we decide, when we frame a person that way, from that moment onward, I don't see how we could ever be happy in our marriage. Because we all are, we need to be selfish. Imeina nili mili. Hillel, who was very into kindness, said, the first rule is I have to take care of myself. I have to take care of my needs. Now comes the gradation. I've seen in my life, I've seen many couples that I felt one of the spouses was very self-centered. Very. I was once coming to a wedding, and this was a guy who I felt was so cruel that I went to his wedding because I didn't think anyone else would show. He was really not a nice guy. And because he wasn't a nice guy, I wanted to come to his wedding. I figured someone should dance at his wedding. So we walk into the elevator, and standing outside the elevator is the head of his band. And the head of his band says, just a second, I'll come up with you. And he leans over to pick up his bag, and he goes, sure, I'll hold the elevator, and he pushes the closed doors button. I say, was that a mistake? He goes, no. I'm thinking, on the day of his wedding, he can't be nice to the guy who's the head of his band, right? And so the wedding went on. There were constant opportunities to see this guy's lack of midot. And I kept thinking to myself, I don't envy his wife. I really don't envy his wife. This is not going to be easy. I don't know how anyone could live with this guy. What can I tell you? Years have passed. And I've known this couple till today, and he's changed. She is a very caring and giving person, and today so is he. I still think he has a style that's crass or cruel, but he does a lot of actions that are very good. He does a lot. He does a lot for other people. He's evolved. And I've seen it in both genders. I've seen people grow. And when I say I've seen people grow, I'm giving you one example. When we decide I've married someone who's selfish, at that moment, it's hopeless. What can I do? They're selfish. If I can say I see good in this person, and I'm going to build with this person, I'm going to work with this person, that's when there's hope for a marriage. And I'm not contesting what you're saying, that we are a more difficult generation. We definitely a more difficult generation. We're definitely a more self-centered generation. You know, it bothers me. My website's name is Torah for Me, and it annoys the heck out of me. Because the Torah is not about me. Torah is about doing what's right. It's about their bon shalom. It's about living an ethical life. It's about everything that's good and kind and true. It's not about me. And it bothers me. So today I'm shifting my website to 123torah.com. I bought the domain name 123torah. And I'm slowly shifting the stuff to there. Because I don't think it's right. Educationally, I agree with you. Where it's the iPhone. Even the phone has to have the word I. iPhone, yeah, I'm saying, I agree with you. We're a more complicated generation. I think a generation ago, people would be embarrassed to point a camera at themselves. Today, they call it a selfie, and it's okay. But when I was a kid, if someone would be on a trip and point a camera at themselves, everyone would look at him like he was crazy. That's the picture you want. If you take a picture with friends, if you take a picture of what you're seeing, we understand that. Selfie, and people aren't even embarrassed about it. I agree with you. There's a challenge in this generation, but I don't think it's an insurmountable challenge. I think that we definitely encounter people who are more self-centered, and we definitely wish upon ourselves to marry someone who is less self-centered, but we have to be open to change. There are many stories I could tell, but I don't know if we want to spend time on this point. Because whatever story I'm going to tell, you're going to walk away thinking that was them. But that has nothing to do with my spouse or the people I married or will marry or whatever. There's always that, so I'm not sure we accomplish anything. There are phenomenal stories I've seen of where people have grown. I'll tell you two quick stories. You want the longer version or the shorter version?
The better version.
The better version. Okay. So it was about a decade ago, Friday night. We had just entered this new Beit Midrash. And we had a late Thursday night learning. We learn Thursday night here, so every other week we learn late. The guys can stay and ask whatever questions they want, and we keep going as long as they want. As long as I have koch and they have koch, we keep going. So we had one of those Thursday nights, and the 2, 3, 4, I don't know. And then Friday night, I wanted to, after davening, to get home fast. So when they finished davening and they're about to start Adon Olam, you see that back door over there, the equivalent to this door, there's a fire escape, right? I slip out that door as everyone's singing Adon Olam. I don't want all the guys to tell me good Shabbos and whatever. We're going to have long conversations. I don't want that. I want to get out. So I run out. I go up to the light. And I think, great, I'm going to get home at a normal hour. It's going to be a normal Friday night. As I'm approaching the light, there's a guy walking up toward me, one of the guys from class. He obviously did not daven in shul that Friday night. So he walks up and says, Rabbi, can I talk to you for a minute? And I didn't think, I felt like saying no, but I didn't think I could. So I said, sure. And we're standing there at the light, and you know how it goes, turns green and red and green and red, and that's it. And he points to his shoes and says, see those? I say, yeah, shoes. He says, no, those aren't just shoes. Say, okay, what are those? He says, these are alligator shoes. These cost between $800 and $1,000, these shoes. Okay. He says, I want you to understand, I'm a drug dealer, and I'm a thief, and there isn't anyone in my life who I haven't stolen from other than my mother and my grandmother. And when I was in Israel doing whatever I was doing, I ran out of money. And someone told me you can get a free meal at Machon Meir and a bed. So I came to Machon Meir for a meal and a bed. But now you guys are changing me. And I'm not sure I can go back to the life I used to lead. Say, that sure stopped me in my tracks, right? He says to me, you know how many times I've been in prison? I said, no, I didn't know you were in prison. So he starts telling me the prisons he's been to and over what offenses he's been to jail. And then he says to me, if I make Aliyah and I lead an observant life, am I going to be able to buy alligator shoes? And we spoke for another 10 minutes. And he continued in Machon Meir. And he is one of our alumni who today spends his whole day doing things for Klal Yisrael. Every job he takes is a job that involves being kind to other people. Every job he takes is a job that revolves around values. This is a man who went from being a drug dealer, living in the slums, and dealing drugs, and being in prison, and doing drugs, and in his own words, there wasn't a person in his life he didn't steal from other than his mother and grandmother. And he went to being such a tzaddik today. And again, this is a person I know. And I could tell you other stories. That's what I'm saying. I could sit here and tell you stories all night about people who came from places where they were very self-centered to the point of, okay, again, the stories, I've been here over a decade. There are a lot of stories. But what we see is that there's, at the center of a person's being, there's something good, and a person wants to be good. No one wakes up in the morning and says, I want to be bad. Everyone wakes up in the morning and wants to be good. We don't always know how. And when people are kind to us, that's what brings out kindness in us. Many people don't know how to be kind. And I'm not telling you to go marry the girl who you see on the dates is very self-centered and unkind. I'm not saying that. I am saying that when a person wakes up the morning after marriage, as your brother so aptly put it, and says, now I made a mistake, now I'm done for. At that point, all that's happened is he realizes there's work to do. I mean, I think the harshest story is the story of the guy who, he wasn't home. He traveled far away. And when the wedding day came, they tricked him. He thought he was marrying one girl, a different girl came, and he wakes up the next morning and he looks at her and says, I didn't think I was marrying you. And she goes, oh. And she knew she tricked him. So the wife he thought he was marrying, he wasn't married. Now he married a different woman. You know who we're talking about, right?
Yaakov
Avinu. He thinks he's marrying Rachel. He wakes up in the morning and it's Leah. Excuse me, what type of mythos is that? They kept a very thick veil on her.
He didn't lift it? No. He lifted it to make sure that
they kept the lights very dim. And they were twin sisters.
That they learned afterwards.
No. It says in the Medrash. The lights were very dim. And they were twin sisters, it says in Seder Olam Rabbah.
So she was older then?
I don't know who was born first, but they were twins.
I thought Leah was older. That's why I'm...
Right.
So she must have been first.
It doesn't say Bechorah. It says Gedolah. And it's a machloket rishonim whether Gedolah means older or bigger. But let's say... What?
It's a funny story, though.
But they built a family.
I don't know, you buy a car, you want to check it has an engine. You're marrying someone, you want to check. Oh, okay.
You want to go into that story, come Thursday night, or come Parshat.
Levon was a good businessman.
Probably, yes.
That's what happened.
הבחירה לפני הצעירה. לא יעשה חן ממקומנו לתת הצעירה לפני הבחירה. How do they answer that? It's a good question. I don't remember if it's the Ibn Ezra or the Rashbam. I have to look. It's a good question. I don't know. I have to look. Because over there it says Rachel Bitcha Ketana. But he's saying Tzira and Bechira, it says there. Yeah. I don't remember. I have to look. I don't remember. The Shukrach. I don't remember. I don't know. I also don't remember who's the one that says it in the pshat of the words. Because they want to say that because Leah was more fit, she took out the sheep and not Rachel. Rachel was frail and little in terms of size, but I don't.
I should report what you're saying because Yaakov and Esav, they were also twins. That was supposed to be.
Yeah, so that they were twins. It says in Seder Olam Rabbah, and that she. So it could be she was the older one. That the idea of being bigger, I don't remember who says, but if I think it says it in the Rishonim. Shema Gedola Leah v'Shema Ketana Rachel. On that pasuk, I think someone interprets it as size. You're saying there's the other pasuk, which nonetheless you have to say she was also older. Okay. I have to check.
It's possible that they were twins. She was the first one to
come. Right. Still Bechira. Yeah. have to look. I don't remember. Tov. So we discussed certain aspects of Jewish home. We discussed the idea that if we frame, if we view a person through a certain lens, then we're always going to notice that about the person. And we can decide. We could use that for the good. If we can choose positive things, now that's where it becomes work, because our nature is that we don't. Years ago, I was in a certain yeshiva, and there was one guy there who was really annoying. And I tried to be decent and stay away from him, but he wouldn't stay away from me. So I would be walking into yeshiva, and he'd be standing outside smoking, and he'd light a match, light a cigarette, and throw the match at me. I mean, I wasn't very comfortable. I knew, like, are you scared? like, really not a nice guy. And then, the years passed, I left that yeshiva, and I forgot about him. And then one day, I find myself sitting right next to him, and I discover that our paths have crossed again, and we're about to be together for a very long time. And I made believe, like, so he goes to me, wow, weren't we together back in, so I said, yeah. He says, oh, it's so good to see you. And I try to say the same, and I'm thinking, oh, no. And then he got married, and I was so thankful that his wife never called me for references. And then one day we show up at a simcha together. And I'm sitting at the simcha, and his aunt comes over and asks him, how are you doing? How's married life treating you? And he goes, amazing. And she goes, really? I thought a bum like you would have it really hard. And he goes, you kidding? I come home, I put my shoes down, my wife cleans them up. My wife feeds me, and then she cleans it up. Everything I need, my wife takes care of. What are you kidding? Married life is great. So his aunt goes, oh, so you got a slave. So he goes, no, that was all a joke. My wife's amazing, though. And suddenly I see a different person. And he starts talking seriously about what a wonderful wife he has. So I didn't say anything. I just listened. And I tried to think, was he really that bad when I knew him back then? Because suddenly he seemed decent. It only took 2 minutes till I realized he was. He still had a pretty lousy sense of humor. But he changed. And then we leave. And my wife tells me, you know, very interesting thing happened at that simcha at the women's section. I said, yeah, what happened? She says, I sat next to this lady, and she starts telling me what a nice husband she has and what a wonderful person her husband is. And I spoke to my wife a little bit more, and I understood this was the same guy, the very same guy that my wife is coming back and telling me that the woman sitting next to her told her what an amazing husband she has. What? But what struck me was that he knew how to define it. When he said, I have an amazing wife, he said, my wife never complains. And then he elaborated on one point. And I don't remember what she said about him, that he's never sad, he always takes things with some humor. I don't remember what she said. And then she elaborated on that to my wife. And I said to myself, why are they happy? Because each one was able to find a point that they could see the good in their spouse, and then they could see everything around it. I'll give one more example. Again, I'm just trying to figure out which example to give, because each one a person's going to say, that one doesn't prove anything. A couple once asked for a meeting SOS. So, okay. They said they are very urgent. So, we sit down, and the husband's face, half his face is all red. So, we start the meeting, and he's all upset, and he's like shaking. And he points to his face, and he says, "You see this?" I say, "Yeah." He goes, "My wife got upset at me. She walked over with burning hot, a frying pan with a cracked egg and hot oil, and just poured it on my face. And she goes, she goes, she goes, yep, it's true. Okay. So, conversation goes on, and I speak to him a little bit, and her a little bit, him a little bit. At the end of the conversation, I tell the guy, you know, I understand your wife has a temper, and she lost her temper, and she did something that should never be done. I don't disagree with you. I'm not contesting that, but I also understand from everything you said that you have a very kind wife. She did something which was very wrong, and she hurt you, and it was wrong. But everything, the picture you've said is that you have a very kind wife. And he sits there crying for the next half hour, telling me what an amazingly kind person she is. He says, "You're right, she is. I don't contest that, she is. She has to learn how to take control of her anger. She has to learn there are certain things you can't do. But for sure she is." And I spoke to them once or twice afterwards. I wanted them to go to a professional therapist. I didn't feel like I was the right person to work with them. But he always came back to that point. And to my mind, that's, I can't say to my credit, but his perspective, that he zoned in on the positive in his wife. Now, the guy was burned. I never checked to see if he recovered, you know. You're always curious, you know. Does he still have a burn mark? Is that going to go away? I never checked. I never looked. I don't know. I don't meet them often. I meet them like once every 5 to 10 years. I have no idea. But I think their marriage is doing not bad from what I can know from our conversations with him. Again, he was able to see what's good about her. And the fact that you're saying there are weaknesses of our generation, there are strengths of our generation. We part of what has to happen in marriage in order for it to work is, can I see the good in the other person? The bad you're going to see whether you like it or not. And it's real bad. No one can say it doesn't exist. No one can say you married a perfect person. I once set up a guy with a girl, and after the date he calls me back and he says, "She's not perfect." And I had to mush bite my tongue. I'm standing there thinking to tell him, "Well, if she were, I wouldn't set her up with you." Right? You're not perfect either. Neither am I. Right? That's, what? I should have said that. but that's reality. Of course we're not perfect. We're all puzzle pieces. There are the aspects of where we're good and aspects where we should be better. I'll tell you the truth. I don't know if this guy's going to show up again. I don't know what your schedule's like. So we did a lot of the Jewish home. Let's take the last 5 minutes. If you guys have questions or topics you want us to focus on. We covered a ton. Much more than I usually do in the first class of the series. But I tried. I don't believe I addressed your question sufficiently. My goal is to give you starting points. I don't think, from what we learned tonight, you have enough of an answer to get married tomorrow. No. Your questions are good, and my answers are partial. But there's a lot. I'm saying that's why we have a year-long class on this. There's a lot to discuss. I think these are part of the tools that need to be used. But we haven't finished. There's a lot to discuss. Okay.